Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Back to the Tennis Connected Studios for June 30th, 2017. I'm Nima Nadari alongside Parsa Sami, and we're here this week to preview the Wimbledon Championships. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up if you're still looking to get down to SW19 next week, as well as the upcoming US Open. Let's introduce our co-host for this week. Parsa, how are you today, my friend?
Well, excited about Wimbledon.
No doubt about that. We got the third major right on deck. Draws were released today for both the men and women. Qualifying has also concluded, so we're all good to go. Parsa, I mean, it's going to be, you know, I just mused through, firstly, the men's draw, and I saw that, you know, in my mind, in terms of the compelling matches and storylines that could take place, I think that this could be one of the best Grand Slams that we've had in a long time. And if you look at, there could be so many nice clashes, you know, second round, even third round. You know, we got guys like Kokkinakis back in the mix. So I think Del Potro's there. I think we could really see some great tennis unfolding. And I think we should just get right into, you know, our draws and seeing, you know, how everything is going to unfold. Obviously, we have the favorites such as Roger Federer, who's coming in off of just winning Halle for the, what was it, the ninth time? Eighth or ninth time, just a couple days ago. We have Petra Kvitova on the women's side winning in Birmingham, which was amazing to see, you know, her come back and win a title after, you know, that horrific accident that happened to her about 6 months ago, back in her condo back home. And I just think that, you know, we're going to see some, could be a Federer and Kvitova, you know, winner at the end of all of this, but there's a lot of players, 127 on each side that are going to have something to say about that. So as the, you know, the grass court season has unfolded, we're wrapping up Eastbourne tomorrow. Djokovic is in the finals. Let's see how he pulls up against either Monfils or Gasquet. I believe they were in the third set before we came on air. And we'll see how that unfolds. But how has the grass court season unfolded for you thus far as we lead into, you know, Wimbledon, and how we're going to break down both draws?
I almost love this gap now that they have, because there's a true grass court season.
Yes. You know,
there's multiple grass court tournaments and players are able to prepare or take a wild card if they haven't won enough, or do a little bit less or whatever it is. And you can actually prepare for Wimbledon. And I'm not sure that it's going to make that much of a difference, but it'll be interesting to watch year after year how the pro circuit sort of tailors themselves to the quote-unquote grass court season. Instead of it being just Wimbledon, you know, you literally can play 5 weeks, you know, if you want. You know, if you go to the finals of Wimbledon and you played it 3 weeks before, you can be there for 5 weeks on grass. So I think it's pretty interesting, and something that interesting to watch how players progress and come through that have different strengths that don't necessarily translate to other surfaces. So so far, you know, I've got a lot of still kind of the same as I normally would, I guess. I still have a lot of question marks, other than I know that Federer's in shape and he looks like he's charging on all cylinders and definitely one to watch. And in terms of the women's side, Kvitova winning, I think, is a very big deal. And mm-hmm. I think she's one to watch. So I think I just named my two favorites of the tournament. What about you?
Yeah, I think for me, there's a couple standout things. Federer losing in Stuttgart to Tommy Haas was interesting, but kind of expected. I mean, he was off for so long. You know, Haas is playing at home in front of for the last time. He's doing his circuit to wrap it up for his career before he puts all his attention into being the tournament director for the BNP Paribas Open. And so that was interesting, but nice rebound for Federer. And I think all is washed away with, you know, his loss in Stuttgart. He's feeling good and he's practicing now, obviously, at the practice facility in London. And ready to go. I've noticed for sure, Parcells, that the grass this year, at least from what I've watched a bunch of matches, is playing very slow. And I think, I don't know if they've changed the rye in the grass even more so. I know it was really hot, for instance, in Queen's Club last week. So it's, you know, that's really firming up the courts. The bounce is getting higher. You know, that's really going to bode well for a guy like Rafa Nadal, or, you know, players that have a lot of action on their shots, which you see much more obviously on the men's side with the topspin that they're able to generate. But, I mean, I think that's a major standout for me. However, now the weather at Wimbledon has tapered off and it's become cooler. And that will obviously transcend to even slower conditions, right? Because the livelier and sunnier and hotter it is, it makes it much quicker. So I think you're going to see that potentially benefit some of the more baseline players and not necessarily, you know, the serve and volleys. Not that there's that many of them, like a Misha Zverev or a Herbert on the men's side, but you're going to see, I think, that, you know, not maybe bode well for them. Again, weather conditions can change. We're still, you know, Friday, tournament starts in about 3 days. So we'll see how it goes down. But I mean, it's going to be, you know, very interesting to me to see how it transpires. And then we have a guy like Andy Murray, who's basically coming in with no form, nursing also a hip injury. We have Djokovic desperately trying to regain his form by playing in Eastbourne, which is in the finals of tomorrow. As we know, Novak hasn't played, I believe, a grass court tune-up for about 7 years. So this, how will this, you know, even if he wins, how will this, you know, shake up, you know, then he's got maybe just a day or so to get ready to play at Wimbledon, right? So I don't know. I mean, I don't know really how that's going to benefit him. I guess he just wanted some matches. So that's, you know, that's the call him. And Agassi will be there during the fortnight. I'll have some more opinions on that. And then from there, Rafa, we haven't seen him. What has he been up to? I know he's been practicing. He's been playing some exos. I know he got destroyed yesterday by Dimitrov in some practice sets. He lost in the Budos exhibition. He lost 2 and 3, I believe, the other day as well. So he's not, again, I know that doesn't mean anything in the scheme of things. And I know you have some different thoughts on Nadal, but I don't know. I mean, he has really no form on grass in the last 4 or 5 years, right? So how's that going to bode for him? And then on the women's side, it's a little bit of a crapshoot, as we know. We have Kvitova, we have Venus Williams coming in with, you know, some backstories, some unfortunate backstories that she has to deal with. We have Halep. How's she going to rebound from, you know, that very disappointing end to the French Open? Is Ostapenko somebody to watch out for after winning her maiden title? So these are some of the stories that are going to unfold as we get into it. So, Parcells, with no further ado, let's get into the men's draw. And we have Andy Murray at the top, obviously, as a number one seed coming in. He's facing lucky loser Bublik, who's had an interview with him earlier this year. He's a very funny guy. I'm sure a lot of the fans of the ATP out there have seen him doing some, you know, candid interviews with a lot of the stars like Federer, even Murray and Tsonga and whatnot. So he's a very lighthearted guy, super powerful game. And he's going to come out there as most of the guys playing the number one player in the world with nothing to lose. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a couple of tight sets in that one. Going forward a little bit in this quarter, we have Dustin Brown, who, you know, loves this surface. Yuri Vesely, who's a big hitter. Tursunov, who once again, Parsa, only shows up for the Grand Slams. Fabio Fognini, talented guy, but he's just had a child and he's not really, has any grass court prep. Nick Kyrgios, who I would love to see do something here, but again, he's nursing some hip problems, some knee issues. So we'll see how he pulls up. Shapovalov, who got a wild card, really looking to fight, plays Janovic, who I totally believe that Dennis can win that match if he keeps his head together. And then to round out this quarter, we have Stan Wawrinka, who the last piece of his Grand Slam puzzle is right here, but he has a very tricky opponent in Danny Medvedev in the first round. So, Parsa, how do you look at this quarter, and who do you see coming out of this one?
It all has to do with that number one right there.
Yes.
You know, how do we deal with not knowing? So there's got to be an asterisk for anybody who's doing any sort of preview that we don't know what Andy Murray's going to do. As of, you know, you sound pretty confident that he's going to play. I just read an article online that was saying that he's a good chance he's going to pull out. So
really, eh? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, but it's all rumorville, right? In the era of fake news, you know, who knows? We can write something, and someone else can write something else. It's sort of just a best guess, and we don't know. That injury seems pretty serious. He hasn't been practicing as much as he normally would heading into a slam. That's for sure. So I think that means a lot, you know, because otherwise, I think it's a pretty favorable draw for a healthy Andy Murray. In terms of really, the entire section is a pretty healthy thing. That's if he's fully fit. And
yes.
I don't believe he is. So
same here.
I have to go with a little bit of a surprise, and it never works out that way.
Yes.
But I'm going to go for it anyway. I'm going to say that at this first section in the quarterfinal, I'm going to have a Lucas Pouille coming through. I think he can hit a big ball and has a tendency to enjoy the big moment. And
yes,
now that he's free from the French attention, you know, and he sort of just can go play, you know, maybe he's going to be able to put something together here.
Yeah, and I think that's a great. He's had actually a very, very nice grass court season. He won Stuttgart. So I mean, this guy's a player. I mean, he plays well on all surfaces. Remember, he made the quarters here last year. So he's proven that he can play on the surface. And for me, like I said, I mean, it's interesting, this injury with Murray, Parsa. It just showcases overall how physically demanding it was for him to gain that number one ranking at the end of the year. You had Federer basically off the map, injured. You had Nadal, injured. You had Djokovic falling out of form. And then you had Andy Murray having to gain so many points with, you know, just like a glimpse that he could, like a glimmer that he could become number one in the world. And he said, you know what, I'm going to go for it. Played a ton of matches, put super amount of stress and anxiety on his body. And you can see the backlash of that, right? This year, we've talked about this obviously in previous podcasts, but, you know, just the injuries, that is the shingles, the elbow problems, the hip injuries. And I don't think any of this has to do with the tennis of 2017. It has to do with the tail end of, you know, from basically Wimbledon till December of 2016, and how much stress and punishment he put himself through to finally say that I was the number one player in the world. And listen, man, you know what? Even if he loses it after Wimbledon, he's had it for a decent amount of time. He's not going to go down as the all-time great for number one, but nevertheless, he had it, and he had it for a decent amount of time. So we'll see how it pulls up, but no question that if he pulls out or he's out early being the defending champ, he's not going to be number one in the world anymore. With that said, I'm going with another guy to come out of this section by the name of Nick Kyrgios. And a lot of people are shaking their heads right now, like, what is Nima talking about? You know, Nick Kyrgios, this guy's, you know, he's a clown. He's done this, he's done that. He's, you know, he's not professional. He's had injuries. All of that is true. All of that is true. But you know what? This guy's a heck of a grass courter, and he's probably the most clutch server in the game for me. No question about it. He believes in himself. He's a little bit undermatched right now. He hasn't played a ton of matches lately, but he loves the grass. He wasn't playing his best tennis last year. He got to the fourth round to play Murray. I believe that Murray potentially won't be there in another, you know, rematch for them, as it looks right now based on the seedings. And for that reason, I can see, you know, Nick getting through here and making the final four. Moving now to the second quarter, it's led.
I guess I was supposed to give my semifinalist, huh?
Yes.
What do you think about Stan Wawrinka here?
It's a tough one for me because Stan has historically not played well on grass. He lost his first match, right, in Queens as well. So, I mean, look, he's got Paul Anacone in his corner now too, which is, I think, I like Paul Anacone. I think he's a serious guy. He knows the grass. He was, you know, the epitome of chip and charge and getting into the net. So there's no question that he's going to be able to add some value. But you can't really, you can give people ideas like McEnroe gave Milos, but you can't change somebody's physiology. You can't change somebody's personality, and you can't change somebody's technique that easily, right? These guys have been playing like this for so many years. You know, Wawrinka's, you know, a four-time Grand Slam finalist, three-time champion. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing, and he's made the quarters here before. Can he really compact his swings that much? Can he move better? I'm not sure. I mean, unless all of a sudden he becomes a serve and volley out of nowhere, or or chip in charge, which he loves to chip that forehand return as well as the backhand. You know, he's known for that. I'm not sure, but based on his experience, he definitely knows what it takes. I just feel that with everything that he has done, the grass will forever be, you know, his biggest challenge. And can he win here? He can, but a lot of things have to go his way. Kyrgios has to get knocked out. Murray has to get knocked out, you know, and just pave the way. And then in the semis, he plays one really, really good match, gets through that. Can he beat Federer on the surface? I'm not sure. We'll talk about that in a bit. You know, Nadal is still lurking. We'll get to him. But for me right now, based on grass court prowess, I got to go with Kyrgios to get through to the semifinals.
And I've got Mr. Puy and Stan Wawrinka in the quarter there. And okay. I've got Stan going through. And, you know, so I guess Puy has to do all the damage. And then Stan's got to come up in there and try to clean it all up. I guess that's what has to happen, right, Nima?
Yeah, for sure. And it's possible. I mean, Puy's another guy who believes in himself. Very strong, fit guy. I mean, the guy's got tree trunk legs. He's very fit. He's very durable. He can play five sets no problem. He showed that on numerous occasions last year against some really good opposition. So I think that he's ready to go. But again, those X factors are what I look for. I mean, Wawrinka has that when he's really feeling it. Kyrgios has that with his serve and his cockiness and his forehand. So, you know, you got to go with those type of guys. So for me, that's why, you know, I took Nick to get through. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of flack for that, but, you know, that's what I'm staying with. Moving on to quarter number two, led by reigning French Open 10-time champion Rafa Nadal. He starts off against John Millman, who we probably foresee him getting that easily through that one. You have the likes of Donald Young and Dennis Istomin in the second round. We have Khachanov, who's awesome. I mean, you talk about a strong guy. I mean, can you get any stronger than Karen Khachanov? I mean, the guy is just bludgeoning the ball all over the place, coming in as the 30th seed, youngster, future of the game, no question. We have Karlovic, who's, you know, for sure good for a couple wins if he can keep fit. Then we have Jules Muller, who, for me, is the absolute dark horse in this section as the 16th seed to get through. He's had a splendid grass court season, and this guy is a player on the surface. For me, the concern with Gilles is, how is his fitness going to hold up throughout a five-set format? That's it. If he can get through that and serve, you know, do his spot serving, I mean, his whole game is predicated behind his serve. And he's, I mean, a dynamite server. And I definitely see him creating some havoc, especially for Nadal. And Rafa has had problems with him in the past. So if they do meet up in the, what would that be, the fourth round, I think that would be a testy encounter for the Spaniard, but I don't know. I mean, Nadal for me is a wild card here. I mean, he cruised through the French Open, Parsa, comes with no grass court preparation. Is that going to hurt him, in your opinion, coming into this tournament?
I think that he has historically played and tried to prepare in a different way this time. You know, maybe he's going this like Federer scheduling. I don't know what's happening, Nima. But, yes. You know, the one thing that I find interesting is that you can never really count him out simply because when it's a live match, he hasn't lost in a while. He's been a ridiculously tough out, even though it's being given a different surface and different circumstances and different bounces of balls and whatever it is. The number one overriding theme of Wimbledon's in the past, where he's done extremely well and held up the trophy, has always been that he's confident entering the tournament. In the last few years, when he's lost, he's always been a little bit shaky for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I think this year he said, okay, well, I'm not going to go and play a grass court event where, I can't try different things and sort of try to find my range. And, you know, I'm going to go out there and let it fly and use what I know and fight every point and see what happens. I think that's what's going to happen this year, and I think that's going to be good enough to at least advance through a few rounds. I'm not sure he's going to do significantly better than he's done the last 3-4 years, but I do think he'll do better than he has.
Okay, Parsa, so this is how I see this one, man. Marin Cilic is a player that, if you know, people who are following us on the show, You know that I'm a big believer in him. I saw him play that Queens Club final. He very nearly won it against Feliciano Lopez, who, again, had a tremendous effort by the veteran Spaniard. But nevertheless, Cilic, for me, the look in his eyes, even when he's losing matches this year, Parsa, he'll go to the net, do that, that hand clasp, and not say anything. Because he respects everybody. He's just, you're not going to hear a peep from him. But, I mean, this guy is very dangerous, in my opinion. He's got a tough draw. He's got Cole Schreiber, who can create some havoc for anybody. He's about as veteran as they come. Florian Mayer, who's a dynamite grass court player. Troitsky, who hasn't done much, but again, grass is probably one of his best surfaces. Steve Johnson, still going to be playing for his dad. He's going to be feeling like this is his best chance in the service to do some damage. You got Nishikori, Jules Muller, Karlovic, Nadal. This is a tough quarter. A lot of people might not see it that way, but you got some really, pure grass court players present here. But with all of that said, I'm going with Cilic, former Grand Slam winner, made the quarters here last 3 years, lost to Federer last year after being up 2-0 to make the semifinals. That's what I have. So what's
I think I've got a little bit of a controversial figure here.
Okay.
In that, he always seems to advance and then kind of fizzle out.
Yes.
That name has to be Kei Nishikori.
Okay.
I think a very good fast court player, very athletic, very nimble. The faster surface will help his serve, which is his biggest weakness.
Yes.
And, I think he can get hot. It's a shot-making type of surface and type of tournament. And,
yes.
I'm not sure that there's a better guy at changing direction than him. And so we'll see, how that plays out. But I've got Nishikori going through it in that he's able to counter and hold serve at the same time. I think a dangerous combination.
So you got him in the semis.
Him in the semis.
Yeah, worry for Nishikori is that he's always injured, man. He had to pull out again from Holly. He hasn't, he's not a very durable guy. Super talented. You made a fantastic point at the tail end of last year that if this guy was, had a little bit of a better serve and he was more durable, there's no reason why he couldn't be number one, because he hits the ball earlier than Djokovic and Murray. The guy has amazing ground strokes, very, very focused guy, trains hard, super fit, but just naturally or genetically or whatever it is, he's prone to injury over and over and over again. So, he's 26, 27 years old now. So it's the same pattern. This pattern is not changing. It's not like he's got 2 years, 2.5 years of a clean bill of health, right? This is a reoccurring theme for Kai. And I'm worried about his durability. If he had the durability, I would say, listen, man, that's an awesome pick. But I just think that somewhere along this line, he's gonna slip up again in terms of his fitness, and that's gonna be the end of him for this tournament. But anyways, we shall see. Moving on to quarter number three, Parsa, led by everybody's favorite, I would say at this point, is Roger Federer. Fed starts off against Dolgopolov, Tsitsipas, who's a young Greek player, a lot of talent there, one-hander. He's going to be potentially in the second round. Lajovic, who's a little bit of a Federer-esque type of player. I don't know for anybody who knows about the Serbian veteran there. He's got a really nice game. We have Vernon Tomic and Misha Zverev lurking, both two. Grass is their best surface. You have Isner, who can never be counted out, although grass is not the best surface for him in terms of the bounce. He's going to be playing his countryman, Taylor Fritz. For me, that has five sets written all over it. So be looking forward to watching that one. You got a guy like Baghdatis, who's made the semis here in previous years. Dimitrov, another semifinalist. Alex Zverev, Parsa. How is he going to hold up? Lost first round of the French. He's going to be hungry to live up to his 10th seed now, top 10 player. Tommy Haas playing his last Wimbledon championships. Jack Sock, Ramos Vinoles. Tricky lefty, but I don't think grass is his best surface. And then we have last year's finalist, Milos Raonic. Raonic, again, Parsa, what's your take on Milos, man? How is he going to do here? A lot of points to defend. Is he going to be able to do it?
He goes starting to go into that Kei Nishikori category.
And yes, 100%.
Kind of know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
If he plays in a matchup where someone's able to move his ball around and deflect him and expose his movement as a big guy, and somehow able to counter and kind of get him to overhit, you can get him out of the tournament. Now, obviously, his serve has got serious value here, and I think he's a massive threat. And I actually have him in the quarterfinal here against Federer, and I think it's going to be epic.
I believe so, and I think that, let's not kid ourselves, man. Roger Federer is going deep in this tournament. I mean, it would be an absolute shocker to me. His form is just amazing. He's got that mojo. Everybody knows it, too. He's got that fear factor in the locker room. Everybody knows he's won 4 tournaments this year, only 2 losses. And pretty much both of those losses, let's be honest, were not very meaningful, right? He lost in Dubai to Donskoy and then Stuttgart to Tahat. So, I mean, they weren't massive tournaments. And they weren't very telling, I mean, to me. I mean, when he needed to win, 500s, 1,000s, Grand Slams, he's been right there, and he's beat some great guys. And for me, I mean, Fed is going through. As in terms of his quarterfinal opponent, again, I would be shocked if it wasn't Milos. Who else do I give a chance to here? Probably nobody else. I mean, I don't think Zverev can beat Milos right now in a 5-set grass court match. Jack Sock has had some injury issues. Grass, for me, is not his best surface either. He's got too violent of a grip there, and it's not really conducive. He's going to probably look to, you know, to peak during the American hardcourt swing. So, yeah, I would probably go with Milos and Fed. But for me, you know, I have Fed going through. You have the same? You got Fed going through?
Fed going through, are you kidding?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and moving now to the fourth and final quarter. We have a lot of question marks once again surrounding Novak Djokovic. Parsa, I want to spend a second here on the Djokovic-Agassi dynamic. So you have, you know, Djokovic still searching for his game. Credit to him. Looked pretty good today in his victory. And now he's looking to, you know, get, you know, Agassi in his corner. Agassi has said that he will be, you know, at the tournament for the entire fortnight for as long as Djokovic is in the draw. Now, this is my concern with Agassi, and this goes for both you and myself. When you're a coach, right, you got to be committed. Like, especially with a guy like Djokovic, there's not like, I'm going to come X amount of weeks or whatever, I'll see what I can do. Unless that is very clearly stated, and you have another coach like Murray has, he's got Jamie Delgado, and then Leno comes for the bigger ones, right? Djokovic has nobody right now. And then Agassi was like, maybe I'll show up at the French. You know, Steffi Graf, you know, convinced him to go. It was kind of half-hearted, but I appreciate the effort. And, you know, it was cool to see Agassi there, and then he bounced. For Djokovic to really benefit from this, he's going to need Agassi to have a little bit of a better commitment, in my opinion. And then he's going to need a guy who's going to be there with him in Montreal, who's going to be there with him in Cincinnati. Agassi, because you need that day to day, right? Like, what's the, like, Agassi's going to FaceTime him every, like, I mean, there's only so, you got to be there, right? You got to be there on the practice court, see exactly what's his timing on his backhand. You know, Djokovic's best shot, which is his backhand down the line, is still not there. I've been watching his matches this week in Eastbourne, and he's missing a ton of those still. He's getting through, competition hasn't been that steep, let's be honest, right? He's got through the likes of Donald Young, who had a pretty good match against him, Medvedev today. But, I mean, he's not playing any top 10 guys, top 5 guys, that they're really going to press him on that. When he's moved out wide and when he was cruising through everybody and destroying everybody, he was hitting that on a dime. He doesn't have that right now. So is Agassi there to give him some advice this week? He's not. So, like, for me, do you understand the dynamic? Like, you need to be there. That's a full-time job, 24/7, right? And if Agassi can give him that type of commitment, for sure Novak can get back to number one. But if he can't, then I think in a way there's that confusion there, and that will ultimately not get him to where he needs to get to. What are your thoughts on that, you know, from a coaching perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree in that. For you or I or a player that we would coach,
yes,
this would be very true, except for Djokovic or Federer or Murray or that caliber of a guy, where they've got teams of coaches and things, and Agassi's obviously gets all the name recognition, but Djokovic is going to have guys to work on his skill set and things like that. I think Agassi's there for, you know, as you brought up earlier, about how McEnroe was to Raonic. You know, I think it's more of an advisor type of role, even less than what Becker was, but just more of an ideology. Hey, this is how I see the game. See if you can pick up something from what I see and what you do, more than a day-to-day daily grind. So I agree with you. At the same time, it's one of those things that I'm not sure that that's his given role. You know, that's what he's supposed to do as part of the team. So if it's supposed to be, then I would say it's an utter mistake.
Yes.
So I wouldn't say it making any more sense other than, you know, really just sort of being the name and doing that kind of thing and sort of bringing a different view.
I completely agree. So looking now at this draw, we have Djokovic against Clizon, who I think will be able to get at least a set from him. Moving on, I think he gets by the likes of Escobedo or Plavsek in the second round. We have Gulbis, who's, dropped off the face of the earth, really. I don't know what he's been up to, but not playing good tennis at all, but he is in the tournament. We have Del Potro, who's been nursing some injuries. He's going to be playing against Kokkinakis. Great to see him back. That's going to be a wonderful first round on many different levels. So I would suspect that it would be a Delpo Djokovic third round. And you think that Djokovic is going to be able to get through that one. I think that their history would indicate that it's going to be a lot tougher than it should be or could be. But I give Delpo a chance there, man, especially with the fragile nature that Djokovic has been in lately. But, you know, looking at some other guys, not the toughest quarter, to be honest. I mean, you know, Borna Coric, not a grass quarter. Berankis, not a grass quarter. David Ferrer has been struggling. Gasquet certainly is, but he's made the semis here, but he's not really a threat to win it. Pospisil could do some damage. He plays against Dominic Thiem, and I don't think we're far off in suggesting that, you know, Pospisil can win that match. And I think he can. If he does win that match, then I think he can go further. Another guy for, you know, those who don't know is Chilean qualifier Nicolas Jarry, who's wonderful, massive guy, about 6'6", 6'7". Kind of like a Delpo type of guy. And, you know, he's starting to come into his own now. And, you know, watch out for him because he's gonna be a nightmare maybe to play in this tournament for Gilles Simon as well as, you know, in the future. You have Tipsarevic. With everything that we mentioned, though, Parsa, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, too. I'm going with Djokovic to make the semifinals with Pospisil to upset Thiem in the first round. What do you have to round out this draw here?
As you do, I've got a good old steady, or anyway, for my quarter, I've got Berdych and Djokovic. I think it's a very interesting section. I do think Pospisil can obviously defeat Thiem, which doesn't have to be that difficult to do. You know, with those huge, big strokes, Pospisil likes to take the ball early and be aggressive at the same time. And he's looking for a resurgent type win, and this could have that mask or that exterior of such a win. So there's a lot of things that are heading in that direction. But at the same time, Thiem is a top eight player in the world and something, you know, you're not going to just beat him just for showing up. So you're going to have to actually go out and play like the tennis, and we'll see if Pospisil is up for the task. That being said, I think I'm going to keep picking Djokovic Nima until he snaps out of it because his head's not even close to being there. And be honest, it's amazing, but you know, he's gonna eventually find it, Nima, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's impossible that he's still there. Like, the physical is still there. It's not like something that he could ever do, you know, be slow or whatever, but you know, it's a matter of time until his mentality starts to come together. And I just have to have Djokovic going through the semi here. I think he's the class player amongst world class players.
Yes.
You know, and I can't get over that. So Djokovic for me.
Okay, and I have the same, obviously. Now, now gets to the tough portion of this draw, Parsa, as we, you know, we break down who we think is going to take it. So I have Kyrgios, Cilic, Kyrgios, Cilic, Federer, and Djokovic as my final four. I have Cilic defeating Kyrgios. I have Federer defeating Djokovic. And then I have Federer defeating Cilic in straight sets to win his eighth Wimbledon title. What do you have? So you have, who did you have in the first quarter? You had Pui?
No, I have Wawrinka.
Okay, you have Wawrinka, okay.
Wawrinka, Nishikori, and Federer, Djokovic.
Yeah.
And I've got Nishikori advancing to the final here.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to have Federer obviously defeating Djokovic. I think, you know, mojo is one thing, beating Federer this year, not so good. Mojo, no mojo, Federer is a freight train, and he's looking to create separation. Nadal just got one closer, and I think Fed needs to now go and topple him, and then it's going to be an interesting U.S. Open, Nima. So I've got a Federer over Nishikori in straight sets, maybe four, and that's it. I think it's going to be an incredible renaissance and just Federer 2017.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if he's not holding the title at the end of the fortnight. Okay, Farah, so now our task becomes a little bit more difficult with the always unpredictable women's draw, especially with Serena Williams still out of action with she's expecting obviously her first child in the fall, which we wish her well continually. So now as we look at this draw, we have Kerber as the top seed, but not playing like the top seed, and she plays Falcone in the first round of qualifier. I believe she'll get through that. Lifkins could definitely give her, you know, a run for her money in the second round. Good grass court player. She's had some good results here in the past. Shelby Rogers, who plays well on the surface. Safarova, who's a former semifinalist here. Watch out for her. Kiki Berkins, who also plays well on the surface. Muguruza, who's down to number 14 in the world, Parsa. For me, that's very surprising after, you know, her losing early in the French Open. Radwanska, who's a little underpowered, but can definitely still play well on the surface. Made the final here, I believe, 6 weeks ago. 6 weeks ago, pardon me, 6 years ago. And then we have Kuznetsova as the seventh seed. So, tough quarter. I'm going to go with veteran lefty Czech player by the name of Lucy Safarova to make the semifinals here. I just feel that Lucy, a little bit under the radar, but wow, still playing a decent amount of brand of tennis. And I think that if she keeps it together, she can do some damage here and make the final four. What do you have?
Amazing. I'm going to go with my, Nima, someone has to go through our preview podcast of the slams, but I think I have this lady going through every single time. And I think every time she loses first round or something, but, I'm going to have a Radwanska going into the semis here. I think, for the lack of understanding of how the draw will shape up and really not understanding who's going to be in form on that given day, yes. I think Radwanska is going to give the best chance for her to possibly advance. And so I'm going to go with her in that she can find different ways in different kinds of matchups. And we'll see how that rolls out. Thank you, Radwanska, Nima.
All right. So moving to quarter number two, for me, it was a little bit more clear cut here. Pliskova has proven that she can go deep in slams, making the semis of the French on her absolute worst surface. For me, was very impressive. She made the U.S. Open final as well last year. So with her serve, with her forehand, not the best mover, but I mean, wow, you know, you put that ball in her strike zone, in her slot, and it's go time. And she's just going to destroy the ball. So I think that it's definitely, you know, prime for her to make a very deep run here and do some damage. So for me, not too much to describe here. You have, like I said, we'll just get through it. You have Pliskova. You have Zhang in this quarter. You have Gravilova. You have Pavlyuchenkova, Coco Vandeweghe, and Wozniacki, who's playing in a final tomorrow as well, too, I believe in Eastbourne. But again, Wozniacki historically has not played well at Wimbledon, and she doesn't have really the firepower necessary to go really deep in this tournament. So for me, that's why I'm going with Pliskova to make the final four. What do you have?
The most logical one is Pliskova. That's who I had as well.
Okay.
I think she can serve and have the ball not come back, and I think that the virtue of 3 points in that situation, I think it's going to help her quite a bit.
Yes.
And she's able to strike the ball big into the corners. And so with the wingspan on top of it, I think she's got a good chance of making a deep run. And I agree with you, a very impressive run at Roland Garros. And I think an equally run here, I think. And you're going to have someone who's deep in almost every slam in the calendar year, or not the calendar, in the whatever it is, the annual year. From a year ago, she seems to be deep in the big events. And I think she's going to go for another one here.
Yeah, I would suspect the same. Okay, so moving to quarter number three, we have the likes of Sibulkova, Konju, Strykova, Venus Williams, Ostapenko, Madison Keys, Lucic Baroni, and Elena Svitolina. So I look at Elena Svitolina. You know, I've been bigging her up now for the better part of a year to the last 6 months. Really like what I've been seeing from her. Hasn't really proven that grass is made for her, but with I think if the surface is playing a little bit slower and the bounce is slightly higher, then I think that she's going to be able to really pound through the ball and win some matches and go deep here. She's at a career high of number 4 in the world, which is very impressive. And her draw, she's got Barty in the first round, Schiavone or Manila, not really grass quarters. I think she can get through that. Lucic Baroni made the semis here, Parse. Are you ready for this? 1999. So, but what, 18 years ago? So that's remarkable. But she definitely has what it takes, I think, to at least get through a few matches. Ostapenko, for me, is a wild card. Venus, she's a true professional. Very sad what happened to her with that car accident back in Florida. Hopefully everything, gets smoothed out with that situation. We'll see how she rebounds with that in the back of her mind, as well as that the British tabloids are going to be all over her with those questions, and she's going to be very straight-faced and responding those and not getting too, intertwined in that. So we'll see how that transpires. A blast from the past name here, Parsa, is Sabine Lisicki. Massive game, excellent for grass, former finalist here. What can she do? I mean, really can't base anything on form. If I was to pick her, it would be more of kind of like, a gut feeling, or like, you're going with your heart a little bit on that one. But I'm not really going to do that in this instance. And for that reason, I'm going to be going with Svitolina to make the semifinals here. How about yourself?
Very interesting. And I'm going to go young here, Nima.
Okay.
I love unknown, but I love unknown from a young person even more, because they are in a position where they become successful at, let's say, 18, 19, 20 years old, and you don't really think anything can stop you. And that's an amazing time of your life.
Yes.
And I think there's one lady that's in there, and that's Ostapenko. And she's the most informed and the hottest player on the WTA Tour in terms of major titles of recent time. And I think she clubs the ball. I think she's fearless. And
yes,
I think that is going to help her quite a bit to advance through some early troubles. But I think as it's going to get later, I think she's going to just let him fly continually and see what can happen. I think she knows what it takes. She knows what she has to do. And I think, I'm going to be rooting for her, put it that way. And I hope she gets the semi like I have her predicted to do so.
Yeah, and you know what? For her, it's all about that belief. And she believes that she should be there. And that usually bodes well for anybody in any profession in terms of their success, right? It's like, it's not a big deal, man. I just won French. Okay, great. Let's go get ready for Wimbledon. I'm supposed to win this tournament. And you very rarely find that, like, that much poise and, like, confidence in a young person is great to see. And I mean, obviously she can, follow this up with a deep run again here. You know that this player is the real deal, and we got to start, really paying attention to her and what's going to transpire for the rest of her career. Okay, Parsa, so moving to the fourth and final quarter here, Simona Halep, who was defeated by Ostapenko in the French Open final. We have her as the number 2 seed. We have Joanna Konta, who will have to get through, the pressures of the hometown crowd and all of the media coverage that's going to be surrounding her. Roberta Vinci, who I believe is retiring at the end of this year. Talk about slice and dice to the maximum. She's going to be looking to carve through a lot of players. Caro Garcia, another good player for any surface, really very talented French woman. Petra Kvitova, Parsa, who, I mean, how can you not root for her to get through this tournament and win it? That would be the ultimate, you know, Cinderella storybook, you know, run after what happened to her. We have Vesnina, who's the reigning Indian Wells champion. She can play on the surface as well as a former semifinalist. We have Azarenka, who's, you know, playing her first slam in quite a while after becoming a mother. And then we have your favorite, Parsa, Cece Bellis, American youngster, who's, again, I think good for every surface, also great for the women's game. Would be great to see her really, really flourish and go forward. We have Jeannie Bouchard, who is going to have to play a player that she recently lost to in Suarez Navarro. Will she be able to rebound? Not quite sure, to be honest. I mean, right now, for me, no match is a gimme for Bouchard, and she could very well lose that match in the first round. I'm not sure how her ankle is doing. She has been practicing. No real word on that. But I wouldn't be surprised if she loses first round. And for all of that said, I'm going to be going with, you know, the storybook ending to this tournament, and I'm picking Kvitova to go through to the semifinals. Who do you have?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think she's the logical choice in a illogical sort of a section here, in that you're not sure who's gonna perform. You know, you can kind of get through a round maybe of picking who's gonna advance, but then you really have no clue.
Yes.
Especially with Konta getting hurt in Eastbourne, and so you're not sure about that section, and then you got a couple of clay quarters in there, and then, you know, it's just all over the place. You got Azarenka, who's, you know, obviously a former top player and number one in the world. And then you've got Kvitova, who's won this thing. So, you know, you're just really, it's very uncertain, to say the least. And for that reason, though, you have to go with the best player on the surface, and that's definitely Kvitova. I think if she plays everybody in this section 10 times, I think she's going to win more than she's going to lose against each one of those opponents. So for that reason, I'm going to go with Kvitova.
Okay. Now, as my semifinalists were named, I'm going with Safarova, Pliskova, Svitolina, and Kvitova. If you notice a theme there, all of the players have an A at the end of their names.
Very good.
And I'm going to be going with Pliskova to defeat Safarova, and I'm going to have Kvitova to defeat Svitolina, and then I'm having Kvitova defeating Pliskova. I'm going to say two tight sets, something like 7-5, 7-6. What do you have?
Very good. I've got Radvanska versus Pliskova. I think it's going to be the opposites attract type of match, but I think Pliskova ends up winning that 7-5 or 8-6 in the third.
Okay.
And then I've got Ostapenko and Petra Kvitova. And, oh boy, I mean, veteran ball striker versus young and free ball striker. It's going to be a challenge, but I think that Kvitova is going to have the goods. You know, everything in my system, though, Nima, just an asterisk there, is that Ostapenko. Mm-hmm. Why are you saying Kvitova? Not always so sure with these picks. It's very hard to tell, especially 2 weeks beforehand, but I have to go with what I said earlier, and a good reason, in that I think if she plays anyone in this draw 10 times on grass, she's going to be the winner a majority of those times. And so Kvitova over Ostapenko, and then I'm gonna have Kvitova over Pliskova, something like 3-2. Not so close like you think, or you have it down as.
Okay, very good. Now, Parsa, to round out this week's show, we got to provide our dark horses, pardon me. I'm gonna start off with my women's pick, and I'm going with Maria Sakkari, Greek woman who's, I think, going to for sure be a top 10 player at some point. Awesome serve, moves very well, very feisty, and she could do some damage here, I think, to make at least the fourth round. What do you have?
Yeah, I mean, the two players I have actually that are on my radar that are sort of not on anyone else's radar are Coco Vandeweghe, although not dark, and you've heard of her before. Don't expect her. I think she could potentially make a deep run here. And I think Madison Keys also has the goods to go very, very far. Now, obviously, they're both reputable players, but definitely not in the probably even the top 10 in favorites to win the title. So, you know, I look to those two players as I wouldn't be surprised if they are deep into the second week. I'm saying quarterfinal maybe, or beyond that. So look out for those two guys or women.
And for on the men's side, I'm going to go with two dark horses. My first one is going to be Thanasi Kokkinakis, who I think if he can get through Delpo, because we don't know exactly what condition you know, the towering Argentine is in, I think he can have a decent run and at least make the third, fourth round, potentially. I mean, obviously, he would play Djokovic in the third round. That would be a tough one. And then my second one is I'm going with some Canadian talent parcel here. I'm going with Denis Shapovalov. And I think that the young Canadian is really one to watch. He's got a great grass court game, super believes in himself. You know that he's just going to rip over that left-handed one-hander. He's got a nasty slice serve. He's already clocking, what is he, 17? I think he's like 17, 18 years old. He's already clocking a serve over 130, 135. I mean, this guy is going to be good. And I think grass is going to end up being his best surface, along with hard court. And, you know, with that, for that reason, those are my two picks. What do you have as your, you can go with one or two dark horses, whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think this draw more than any draw is going to go as is supposed to go. But that being said, I think if there's two places that there could be an upset, they're both American. I think Taylor Fritz has the game and needs a sort of a rival, winning Memphis year ago. Okay, you know, that's one thing, but he hasn't really backed it up since. And so he needs some sort of a rival in a Grand Slam type setting. And, you know, this is a good opportunity here. This is a winnable match first round, a definitely winnable match second round. He can beat a guy like Dimitrov in the third round. And now you're all of a sudden, you're talking about a Federer matchup in the round of 16. So it could happen. It wouldn't surprise me. And the other one, the other American that is a serious gamer, Nima, is Ernesto Escobedo.
Yes, for sure.
He's got a big serve. It's going to be very hard to break him. But on top of that, he competes and he finds ways to win. And, you know, we have a couple of American young guys who sort of their game A isn't working. They sort of let it go, and it is what it is. Escobedo will continue to try to find a way, and will find a different way if he has to. And I really like that quality about him. I think every champion we've seen in recent times has had that quality about them. Resiliency, I guess, is the right word, and Escobedo's got it. I wouldn't be surprised if he's got Djokovic deep in a fifth there in the second round.
And you know, just to end off on Escobedo, because he's a very intriguing character for me in terms of his background, how hard he's had to work. He's a really good feel-good story, to be honest. And what do you see as his ceiling, you know, to end off this week's show? Do you see him? Can he be a top 20 player? Can he be a top 50 player? He's a really big, strong guy, and he works really hard. And I know that he's not taking anything for granted. He's got some good sponsors behind him as well, too. What do you see as his ceiling from your coaching background and your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't see a ceiling yet. And the reason I say that is because he's in an upward trajectory.
Yes.
There hasn't, and he's not the kind of guy that goes back three steps, gains four steps, goes back two steps, gains five steps.
Okay.
You know, he's sort of just one step at a time, and he sort of just continues to climb. And he started this at the right age, at a younger age. He didn't go to university, and he's just steadily just climbing the rankings, going level to level to level, and continuing to improve his game. And there are no bad habits set in. And like I said, he's got those it type of factors in that you don't really teach those kinds of things, that kind of competitiveness or that tenacity or the resiliency. And for that reason, Nima, I mean, for him to hit 20 is not out of the realm of possibility. I'll put it that way. Beyond that, is anybody's guess. I think it's very difficult, but 20 is a number that I think he definitely can get to.
Okay, very good. Looking forward to seeing if it can go down for him. Okay, Parsa, and everybody out there, that wraps it up for this week's show. Parsa and I will be back next Sunday on the day off for Wimbledon, the day of rest, to review week one, as well as look forward to week two. In the meantime, you can obviously listen to this podcast on our site, on iTunes, as well as follow Parcel Sammy at Parcel Sammy on Twitter, myself at Tennis Connected. You can also follow Tennis Connected on Instagram, our Facebook page. And finally, we're going to have a bunch of different writers throughout the fortnight, like Caroline, like, as you know, we have Ben Stevens, we have Charles, we have Steve Tigner, we have a slew of different types of writers that are going to be putting together some great articles for your enjoyment. Finally, Parsa, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thank you, my friend.
And thanks, everybody else, for listening. Make sure, for anybody that is still looking to get down to Wimbledon, to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. And they're also putting together some wonderful stuff at the U.S. Open. They're also doing an exhibition type of tournament in Stowe, Vermont, the week before. And I believe Tommy Haas, Chardy, Pospisil, and a couple other guys have already signed up. So it's going to be a pretty cool EXO event, kind of like the Boodles type of event that they have in England. So make sure to check that out. And lastly, thanks everybody out there for listening. We'll chat with you guys in about 9 days. Be good. Enjoy the fortnight from London, and we'll talk.